This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy.
Oh, my. Hello and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you are having a fantastic Tuesday. It is, just trying to figure out what that was. That was weird. It is a beautiful day in your neighborhood, I hope, because we're once again reconsidering our plans to build that great big boat and gather up animals two by two, because it's raining again here. Who needs a pool? I mean, just go to the street. You've got the street. Who needs a pool? It is, it's a wet day here. We have wetness in the forecast, showers off and on today, and we've had so much of this rain lately that the neighbor's kids now have webbed feet. It is the 10th day of March 2020, and there's plenty of stuff to be talking about today. Plenty. There's coronavirus. There's Hillary, who's decided to become important again, and there is a place, a nation, which has declared a 14-day coronavirus self-quarantine. We'll look at that, find out more about that. Bernie, Joe Biden, and more, they're in the picture again today. And at the top of most people's consciousness is the coronavirus. I spent some time yesterday looking for public service announcements. Public service announcements with facts and figures and information for the public about the coronavirus. The only thing I could find anywhere was done by local news departments at TV stations in different cities around the country. Local. There's nothing coming out of the federal government. You would think that the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, would have by now produced some common sense guidelines on video to share with stations around the country so that they could be played and people could know the truth. But no, the CDC has nothing. Now, the CDC does have a page with a lot of information on it. And you can go to that page, and I'll include it in today's show notes if you'd like. I'll do that so that you can go find information about the coronavirus from the CDC. But as yet, nothing for television, nothing for radio, nothing for the media whatsoever. And I realize it's a developing thing. It is something that's ongoing. It is something that is in process, and we are studying it, and we are developing ways to fight it, and I realize that's going on. But still, doctor after doctor after doctor, interviewed on television and radio news programs, have been saying, this is nothing to panic about. Just exercise common sense, wash your hands, treat it like you would the flu, steer clear of people. If you have health problems and your immune system is a bit challenged because your body is taking care of those other health problems at the time, then kind of cut back on your public activity for a little while just so you don't get exposed. And this is just exactly what you would do with the flu. You would take precautions. If you see people coughing nearby, you take that into consideration, that sort of a thing. Just common sense stuff. Nothing to panic about. And that's what I keep hearing again and again. And that's not stopping the leftist press from trying to create a panic about this. And I think that's unfortunate. I think it's very unfortunate. And I think it tells us a lot about what the news media is really about. They are proving what I have been saying about them for quite some time, and that is that the news media portrays itself as being this noble part of our society that speaks truth to power, that holds the powerful accountable and tells people the truth about what's going on. That's what they want people to believe. But when it comes to paying for everything you see, that depends completely and totally on the bottom line, how much money these news organizations can make. And the more sensational things are, the more people watch, and the more they can charge for their advertising. You want to buy a spot on one of the cable news channels during the midst of a crisis when you've got the most viewership? You're going to pay a premium. You certainly are. That's the way the business runs. And they're very well aware of that. So, they go for the sensational, because the sensational draws attention, keeps people viewing, and gives them the ability to charge more because they have more viewers. Well, they're treating the coronavirus as the latest disaster, and they're trying their best to whip people into a frenzy over it. Now, the politicians are going along with this because it's politically advantageous at this point, because it's an election year, a big election year. And the Democrats want to defeat the Republican who is in office, Donald Trump. And they want to make this all look like it's out of control and a terrible, terrible thing that's going to kill everybody in America if we leave Donald Trump in the White House. This is what they want you to believe. But it's not true. It's just not true. And I think you need to understand that you are being lied to by the press and by the politicians who are making this out to be something worse than it actually is. I have to tell you again, the flu has already killed more people in America than coronavirus probably will by the time it runs its course. And the flu will continue killing people after the coronavirus has come and gone. This is something we all need to keep in perspective. Now, Dr. Drew Pinsky, was on Fox and Friends the other day, and he had a little something to say about how this is all playing out. And I think maybe we will delve into that. He thinks the establishment media are intentionally inciting fear over the spread of the coronavirus from China. And he appeared on Fox and Friends Friday morning to discuss the potentially deadly infectious disease. He told co-hosts Steve Doocy, Jedediah Bila, and Pete Hegseth, he thinks the establishment media are going to great lengths to stigmatize the virus and manipulate viewers into becoming fearful. He said, the media continues to take every effort to fan the flames of panic. A local news agency in Los Angeles had footage of a paramedic being dispatched to a cruise ship repeatedly, all evening. At the end, they go, oh, by the way, there was a fight on a cruise ship. Somebody got injured. According to Pinsky, people should be prepared to deal with the infection, but the panic is far worse than the virus. He says, let the professionals whose job it is to contain pandemic do their job. Oh, by the way, this is not been judged a pandemic as yet. It hasn't crossed that line. Pinsky praised global health authorities for doing an amazing job in dealing with the coronavirus response. He said worldwide, the efforts and effect of the organizations like the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization has been remarkable. Look, the WHO has said there's about a 3% fatality rate on this virus, and every time they say that, they always qualify it and say, we expect it to drop a lot once we understand the full extent of the virus. The coronavirus is amongst us, he said, and he adds, This is a flu season, everybody. There are 18,000 deaths from the flu. Why aren't we worried about that? Why isn't the coverage? Get your flu shot. You're much more likely to die of the flu than the coronavirus. While he said the coronavirus is not the flu, he cautioned viewers that they should approach the coronavirus in the same manner in which they would prepare to prevent contracting influenza. Penske advised people to wash their hands, keep disinfectant wipes available, and get a flu shot. He said, do all the things you're supposed to do in flu season. It's flu season. He later took questions on Twitter from followers concerned about the virus during a live Periscope broadcast. In the broadcast, he said establishment journalists should be called out for their irresponsible reporting about the virus. He said, people are going to lose their jobs and be hurt by this. He was speaking of the panic, which is leading many people to stay indoors. As of Friday, 101,774 cases of coronavirus had been reported worldwide, and 3,461 people had died worldwide. 12 Americans are among those dead after contracting the virus. Of course, that figure is changing on a daily basis, and that was from Friday. But still, influenza is, as it does every year, sweeping around the world. And as of Friday, over 18,000 people in the United States alone had died from influenza. And we've had less than 20 people die from coronavirus here. The reason everybody is in a panic, the reason everybody's going crazy, the reason people are, get this, stealing face masks from hospitals. That's going on. People are stealing face masks. The ones that actually are effective, the N95 version, they're stealing them from hospitals. People are doing despicable things because of this. And even more despicable, in my view, is that politicians are politicizing it in order to defeat the incumbent president. We're watching this happen on a day-by-day basis. We're watching the press play this up, and we're watching the politicians play along. And honestly, as they play along, they're using this as ammunition against Donald Trump. They're trying to make it a Katrina-like event, when it really isn't a Katrina-like event. It really isn't that horrible. It was horrible in China. Please don't get me wrong. But this isn't China. We don't treat our people here like cattle. And the government in China does. This is not China. More people are dying from the flu every year than you know of, simply because it's not a news story. But this is something new and scary. So it is a news story. And because it's new and because it's scary, the news media is all over it. And the politicians have decided this is their latest effort to undermine the Trump administration and to weaken him in the upcoming election. This is what they're doing. His opponents on the Democrat side, speaking in political rallies, are using this as a wedge. Those who aren't even running, that we know of, are using this as a wedge. Hillary Clinton has come out of her lair, and she has had negative things to say as well. She has accused our president of mishandling the situation. Well, let me remind you that our president was ahead of the situation, and when he was ahead of the situation, he was criticized harshly by the Democrats and accused of racism for shutting down travel coming from the infected area of China. When he shut that down, people screamed racism. Because, of course, with the leftists, everything is racist. If you want to make people think badly about something, it's racist. I don't know if you've noticed that, but if you've ever had a conversation or an exchange with a liberal, a leftist, a progressive, a Democrat in an online forum, when you prove that they're wrong, they probably have accused you of being a racist. Just because you're right and they're wrong. And this is the tactic being used by the left in politics today. They've accused the president of racism simply for trying to protect the people of the United States from what devastated a portion of China. Well, it's not going to devastate us. We're taking the proper precautions. We're doing a good job. Even worldwide health organizations are saying, yeah, the president's processes are doing a good job, doing a good thing. But here in America, the politicians and the pundits, the leftist press, are all lying to us. And they want us to be scared. Just remember, when someone wants you to be scared, usually there's no real reason to be scared. They just want to control you.
Yeah, you were funny. You're funny, all right. You're a scream. You ought to get a job on one of those excursion boats.
I would, but I'm not going outdoors right now. No, I'm just... It's raining. It's the 10th of March, the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Hi there. Good to have you along. We're talking about coronavirus and how everybody's trying to make a major deal out of this. And not to minimize the loss of those who have lost loved ones. There's just a tiny, tiny, tiny number of them here in America. And really, when you do the percentages worldwide, it's a tiny percentage of the number of the people in the world have been negatively affected by it. It was much worse where in its origination point because of the government, the Chinese government in control of everything and manipulating everything. We can't get solid numbers out of China. But here in America, Donald Trump stepped forward in advance and started taking care of situations. Do you remember he actually approved $2.5 billion to address the coronavirus, and the Democrats all squealed, saying, that's not enough, it's not enough. And they finally approved an $8.5 billion package. I read a story last night that just didn't quite make the cut for today, but there are people who were saying that there's so much pork in that $8.5 million that effectively the $2.5 billion, I should say, that Trump approved probably would have done the job, because there is so much pork, or as they referred to it, Christmas ornaments. They hung so much stuff on this that doesn't have anything to do with the problem at hand. It's just an opportunity for these people to spend your money. Actually, they've gone far beyond spending your money. They've spent us into the hole. So they just keep spending and spending and spending. And it's all about undercutting President Trump in some way, shape, or form. They want to be able to say, see, we gave you the right amount of money. Well, really? How much of that's actually going to get spent on dealing with the coronavirus, and how much of it's going to pet projects back in your home states? We'd like to know that. Well, Sunday, Joe Biden falsely claimed that President Donald Trump was muzzling Dr. Anthony Fauci, he's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, from speaking to the public about the dangers of the coronavirus.
Before you go, I want to ask you about the coronavirus. The president, as you know, is calling the Democrats' critique of his response a hoax. How would the overall response to this virus have been different if you were president?
Would have been fundamentally different. We set up a whole system on the Ebola virus and with the Ebola disease that we were all concerned about, a trans-pandemic disease that existed. And look, right now, you have this president hasn't allowed his scientists to speak, number one. He has the vice president speaking, not the scientists who know what they're talking about, like Fauci. Number two, they haven't even prepared a test kit to determine whether or not anybody has the virus. They're not even available.
That's
they say
lie.
Now they'll be available by the end of the week or next week. They haven't set up a pattern and how to proceed. They've cut the funding for the CDC. They've cut the Center for Disease Control. They've cut the funding for NIH, the National Institute of Health. They have eliminated the office we set up in the president's office to deal with pandemic diseases. This has been outrageous, the way they proceeded. They should let the scientists speak. I've been talking about this for a while. They don't even have a test kit. Test kit to determine whether or not someone has the disease. But this is about knowing where it is, who has it, and how to deal with it. I see no preparedness other than a political talking points, putting someone in charge who is not a scientist and muzzling the scientist. Look, Fauci's been here all the way back to the Bush administration. What's going on here? This is not a Democratic hoax. This is incompetence on the part of the president of the United States at the expense of the country and the world.
Mr. Vice President. Well, as he said, quote, I see no preparedness other than political talking points, putting someone in charge who is not a scientist and muzzling the scientists. Mr. Fauci's been here all the way back to the Bush administration. What's going on here? Well, his claim comes a day after Trump and Fauci both denied the New York Times report about the director being muzzled during a press conference addressing the deadly virus. A reporter asked Trump about the report, prompting him to say he was never muzzled. He then invited Fauci to come forward and address this very dishonest question. Fauci said, let me clarify it. I have never been muzzled, ever, and I have been doing this since the administration of Ronald Reagan. He was wrong. It was all the way back to Reagan, not Bush. And I'm not being muzzled by this administration. We were set up to go on some shows, and when the vice president took over, we said, let's regroup. He was talking about we were set up to go on some shows with the media. When the vice president took over, we said, let's regroup and figure out how we're going to be communicating. So I had to stand down on a couple of shows and resubmit for clearance. And when I resubmitted for clearance, I got cleared. So I have not been muzzled at all. That was a real misrepresentation of what happened. But misrepresentation is what Joe Biden and the leftists on the Democrat side are all about, misrepresenting what's really happening, because they can't let you know the truth, because the truth says that the Trump administration was ahead of the curve. They were ahead of the curve to the degree that the Democrats tried to demonize them for their actions to regulate travel into this country. So Joe Biden is lying, and I apologize, but I couldn't stop myself from just calling out each lie as I heard it go by, and there were a couple I missed. But he lied and lied and lied and lied about this. And it's important to remember that Joe Biden has always been a liar. He misrepresented his education. He misrepresented He misrepresented so much about his life, and he plagiarized others when he was making his first step out into campaigning for the presidency so long ago. He plagiarized a British politician and got caught, ended up stepping down. But then there's more. There's even more to reinforce the fact that we have to remember that Joe Biden is a serial liar. When he brought out the story of his confrontation with a gang member named Corn Pop during his time as a lifeguard at a Wilmington, Delaware pool, it's interesting how quickly Democratic leaders knew to come to his defense. There was a gang member in Baltimore with the moniker Corn Pop, they pointed out. There was. The local NAACP chairman backed up his story. There was an obituary for a notorious dude who had that nickname. See, Biden's not lying. Well, there was a reason behind the decided quickness with which everyone rushed to Biden's side. People don't trust his version of events on pretty much anything. Biden's campaign trail anecdotes and stories just don't have the ring of truth about them. They're sometimes painfully fake. The most obvious example of this is a fabricated story he told about a war hero that was at best a composite of other stories. At worst, the Washington Post may have described it best. In the space of 3 minutes, Biden got the time period, the location, the heroic act, the type of medal, the military branch, and the rank of the recipient wrong, as well as his own role in that ceremony. Something like that is ultimately harmless, though. It may sound strange, but think about it. No one's reputation has been denigrated. The same can't be said for the sad case of Curtis C. Dunn. To be fair, Dunn was involved in what's easily the most traumatic event of Biden's life. December 1972, mere weeks after Biden was elected to the Senate for the first term in an upset victory, his first wife and daughter were killed in a car accident while out Christmas shopping. Dunn was the truck driver who hit them. According to the Newark, Delaware Post, Nelia Biden drove the car into the path of Dunn's tractor trailer for reasons unknown, perhaps having to do with her head being turned. Dunn apparently did everything possible to avoid a collision, according to reports, even overturning his truck in the process. He was also the first person to render assistance at the scene. And this is where reality and Joe Biden diverge. And in a profoundly reprehensible manner. And I'll bring you the rest of the story after the break. And I'm telling you the story because I want you to know that Joe Biden is and always has been a reprehensible liar. He is so good at it, and yet so bad.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. Oh my gosh. Anyway, I haven't said a lot about it, but I've been struggling with this crud. No, it's not. It's not the coronavirus. My wife had a sinus infection verging on moving into her chest and becoming bronchitis. And bless her heart, I think she shared the dream with me. And it's been really wailing on me the last few days. And I have a feeling I may be going to get some shots and stuff. Maybe today. Anyway, having some issues keeping the throat clear. We were talking about what happened years ago. Back in 1972, December of 1972, mere weeks after Joe Biden was elected to the Senate for his first term in an upset victory, when his first wife and daughter were killed in a car accident while out Christmas shopping. And the driver of the truck, Curtis C. Dunn, he was the truck driver who hit them. According to the Newark, Delaware Post, Nelia Biden drove her car into the path of Dunn's tractor trailer for reasons unknown. Maybe her head was turned the other way. She wasn't paying attention. But Dunn apparently did everything possible to avoid a collision, according to the reports, even overturning his truck in the process. He was also the first person to render assistance at the scene. And this is where the real world and Joe Biden split in a profoundly reprehensible manner. To hear Biden tell it, at least for a very long time, Dunn's drinking played a role in the accident. He said at a 2007 event in Iowa, quote, a tractor trailer, a guy who allegedly, and I never pursued it, drank his lunch instead of eating his lunch, broadsided my family and killed my wife instantly and killed my daughter instantly and hospitalized my two sons, end quote. Meanwhile, in 2001, Biden talked about how Dunn was, quote, an errant driver who stopped to drink instead of drive and hit a tractor trailer, hit my children and my wife and killed them, end quote. this was a common story Biden would peddle during his early part of the millennium. The problem is that from all evidence, it's totally untrue. The driver, Dunn, was not only cleared by law enforcement, but some of his most vociferous defenders were those involved in the case. Former Delaware Superior Court Judge Jerome O'Herlihy, who oversaw the investigation as a prosecutor, said in 2008, as the story was again recirculating, he said, quote, "The rumor about alcohol being involved by either party, especially the truck driver, is incorrect." Hurley was a bit more terse when talking about the accident to Politico, saying she had a stop sign. The truck driver did not. In the end, I concurred in their decision that there was no fault on his part. Keep in mind that most of this happened after Dunn's death in 1999 as well. Pamela Hamill, one of his seven children, went public with her anger after the story began getting repeated ad nauseum around the time of Biden's nomination as Barack Obama's vice presidential candidate. She said about hearing the clip of how her father drank his lunch before the accident, "I just burst into tears. The story's already tragic enough. Why did he have to sensationalize it by saying my father was drunk? My family is outraged." To make things worse, she said that she sent Joe Biden a message of support in the aftermath of 9/11, lauding his remarks. He responded with a note that said, in part, "All that I can say is I'm sorry for all of us, and please know that neither I or my sons feel any animosity whatsoever." Wow. A 2010 profile of Biden in The Atlantic said that Biden, still technically the Democrat frontrunner, has the limber storyteller's tendency to stretch. That may be fine when you're talking about corn pop and composite stories about war heroes. When you're accusing someone of drunk driving in an accident where your wife and daughter were killed, that's awfully close to libel. He blamed an innocent man for years, despite the fact that all of the evidence showed Dunn hadn't done anything wrong. In 2008, Hamill said, "Suppose he becomes the next vice president. Movies could be made about him and books could be written about him, all falsely portraying my father as a drunk driver. We need to set the record straight and clear my father's name right now before this goes any further." She did. And that played a role in alerting us to how far this limber storyteller will go. Again, I tell a story, I remind you of what happened, to remind you that Joe Biden is a compulsive liar. He lied about the circumstances of his first wife and his daughter's death for political gain. He knew it was sensational. He knew it would elicit sympathy. He knew it was something he could use to manipulate those who were listening who did not know the truth about what actually happened, because few people would know the truth about what actually happened. And he could get away with lying about it and using emotion to manipulate people into voting for him, because he is a victim, thus proving his bona fides as a progressive. He's a victim. So he can relate to you, and he can be your hero. This man who lied about a truck driver, who had the right of way, who endangered his own life and the lives of other people by swerving and turning his truck over to try not to kill the woman who ran a stop sign. Joe Biden is a despicable character. Even more despicable is that he can come across as being the one being victimized. When you see him on the debate stage, when others attack him for his positions, he looks as though, I just don't understand why they're picking on me. That's not the way it is. And then he launches into defense. And when he launches into defense, there's no telling what part of what he says is truth and what is not. And you can pretty much bet that most of it is not. So please, please remember, Joe Biden misled everyone about his wife's death, and he blamed an innocent man for it for years. For years. So what's he lying about now? What is he misleading us about now? What is he fabricating now? When he's out making his speeches before people, when he's campaigning, what's he lying about today? I know the Democrats, the liberals, the progressives, they're keeping a running tab on everything they claim is a lie being uttered by Donald Trump. Well, there's a lot being left to interpretation in their claims. But I'll say this. When it comes to lying, nobody beats a professional politician. And Joe Biden is a professional politician. He's been in politics for quite some time. And every step forward and upward he's made in politics has been based on lies. So when it comes time to make that decision, just remember that that Joe Biden, well, Bernie Sanders is a liar too, on a very grand scale. But Joe Biden has built his entire career on taking credit for things he didn't do and blaming others for things they didn't do. He comes across as being just your average Joe, but he's an above average liar.
The man, baby.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. It is the Tuesday edition of the podcast, and we're pushing forward through it all. I'm looking here at some other stuff. Life is so weird. I don't understand how it is that I can't go through a day without some sort of a technical issue. It's just really weird. Really, really, really weird. And right now, my technical issue is, and this will not affect you on the podcast, trust me, it just won't, but it's affecting me because I can't look at stuff. For some reason, the main computer that I use for looking at the web, it's just locked up on me. It's just a goner. Absolute goner. So what I'm going to have to do, hang on here. I just had an idea. I can go over here. And where am I? I am on this. Bernie Sanders at the town hall. Bless his heart, Bernie lied again, and he got called on it. And in the process, things were very revealing. Now, he has been making this claim that the Nordic countries are doing something that they're not, that they are modeling in front of everybody so they can see it, the kind of socialist programs he wants to implement here in the United States of America. Well, there's a problem with that. Like one of them that he modeled, what he refers to is Sweden. And I shared the other day, well, the other day, it's been several days ago, I shared a link to a video on social media interviewing, well, the president, or the head guy, I think he's the president in Sweden, as well as other people in Sweden, about their economic model. And when asked point blank if they were a socialist nation, they all say, no, we're not. We are a free market, a market-driven nation. They have high taxes to pay for programs, but they're not a socialist nation. Bernie Sanders keeps pushing democratic socialism and then points to places like Sweden to justify what he has to say. Well, the problem with that is when you look at his examples, they don't hold up. And during his session, he had a town hall on Fox News Channel. Martha McCallum called him on.
Use their government to try to improve life for working families, not just the people on top.
So, Senator, let me follow up on that if I may. Basically, since the 90s, if you look at examples in Sweden and Denmark, they have been lowering or cutting property taxes, lowering corporate taxes, allowing vouchers for schools, for public schools and private schools, which is one of the reasons why their education has improved. The founder of IKEA, who famously came back, left his home country, moved here, has now gone back because he says the tax environment for him is getting better. So they appear to be moving away more towards market reform and not towards what you're describing you'd like to see here.
All right, but if you, and I'm not an expert on the current economy in Sweden, but disagree with me if you want. Does Sweden guarantee health care to all people as a human right?
Yeah, but they're finding other ways to pay for it because they have to.
And that's the issue. And did you notice that he dodges. And at the very beginning, let me play just the first bit of that for you one more time. Hello. Oh, here we go.
Use their government to try to improve life for working families, not just the people on top.
Not just the people on the top. Please recognize this, that every time Bernie Sanders speaks, he pits one part of our society against another part of our society. He pits the little guy against the rich guy. And this is a classic socialist move. This is a classic progressive move. Dividing people against one another for political progress. I've told you the story about the guy I used to work for years and years and years and years ago who used to use that basically that was his business model, his management style, was he kept people upset about things in the workplace. And as long as everybody was upset for about whatever, as long as they were unbalanced and not thinking straight and they were emotional about things, then he could maintain control. But when they were no longer, when they realized that they were being manipulated, he got rid of them. There was I've told you before about the young lady who I came in one day and I walked into her workplace one day and she was just as calm as she could be, sitting there with her arms crossed. I said, okay, so what's up with you? Because it was unusual for her. She was usually upset about things. She said, I figured out what he's doing, and I'm not letting him do it anymore. If he can upset me and get me crying, then he can control me. I'm not letting him do it anymore. By the end of the day, she was gone. And this is sadly, a management style of some despicable people. And it is the government style of a despicable ideology called progressivism. You pit people against one another. You make them envious. You tell them it's all about fairness and the reason that people are in poverty. He talks about the number of people living in poverty. he talks about, what is it, a third of all black children are living under the poverty line, and talks about malnutrition, talks about all these other things. Well, when you look at the stats and you look at where these people are living and you look at who is governing where they live, it's always progressives who are in charge of these areas. It's always progressive policies that put these people in the situation they're in. And their mistake is not, the issue is not that some people are rich and they are poor. The issue is that their politicians are lying to them and keeping them down because it gives them power. These politicians thrive off of the suffering of the people they claim to be defending. They convince them that they are a victim and that the politicians are there to work for them and be their heroes. But if they really solved the problem, there would be nothing else for them to do. So they perpetuate the problems. They never solve the problems. Solving the problem eliminates their viability. It eliminates the necessity for them being there. So Bernie Sanders and people like him will never, ever solve problems. I will dig up that link and put it in the show notes today. Make sure you get the show notes. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and grab today's show notes just a few minutes after the live. Probably by, well, but if you're on the podcast, if you listen later in the day, it's already there. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and get today's show notes. And I'll do my best to dig that link back up and put it in the show notes for that interview, so that you can watch it for yourself. Because the government of the countries that he says are his example deny what he has to say. And much like Joe, much like he defended Hitler, or not Hitler, but Castro and these other people, he says, well, is it not true that these people have this? And don't they have better education? Isn't it free for everybody? Yeah, but not the way you're wanting to do it. And they had to change everything from the way you want to do it in order for anything to work in their country, because it wasn't working anymore. Bernie Sanders' ideas never work. Anywhere they've been tried, they have to be abandoned and left in the rear view because they fail. And Bernie would be a failure as a president. And that's it for today. God bless you, folks. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.